Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
No, you're very welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. Mind the Gap is the name of this show today because the gap is narrowing. Celtic have won their first game in what seems like a couple of years. It was a couple of weeks more realistically. But Hibernian, nil, Celtic, two. Ange Ball is back. The three Japanese players that signed in the January transfer window got a run out, two of them starting. And it is just exciting times at Parkhead. Alan Morrison and James are with me as always. Guys, how are you doing?
All right.
Hiya. I may be post-COVID. I'm on pins and needles. So I dealt with COVID over the last week, and I think I've emerged fatter, uglier, but hopefully with less viral shed.
Is that possible?
Fair enough.
Oh Jesus!
I'm quoting my wife on that, so you'd have to ask her. She's the one that says all that. Not me.
Okay, yeah, I'm not arguing with that.
Neither of you. She had been thrown on the Huddle Breakdown.
Perfect.
So listen, it was a long time coming, this game, and it's fair to say the first 45 minutes didn't disappoint, and the second 45 minutes, you know, we'll leave that behind us in terms of the memories of the year, but we'll start off with the broad point of the game. I think this was a different type of performance that we've seen here, Alan, and I've seen you writing about this earlier on today, and I mentioned the term Ange Ball in the intro there. Is there a sign of things changing a little bit with what Ange Postecoglou is trying to do with the Celtic team?
Yeah, I don't know if it's changing, really. It may just be in circumstances. And actually, again, I suspect we need to redefine what Ange Ball is. I think Ange Ball is more of a state of mind than an adherence to a particular...
It's just vibes.
Yeah, it's just a set of principles and a framework. You knew I was going to say that, right? It's a framework. It's not a sort of you will always play this way at all times. I don't believe that. It really isn't. It's more of a set of, as I say, guiding principles for the way the game should be played, and which, you know, but as I think, as I said in my article that I wrote today, I suspect with Postecoglou, the overriding principle is to win the bloody game. So, and that's what Celtic did with minimal threat, actually, towards the end. So job done. And also, I mean, what surprised me is I did watch obviously the game on Tuesday, Monday, and also the game on Tuesday. I was kind of surprised at how all the teams that I saw have lost a bit of fitness, match fitness, over the last 3 weeks. All the teams looked a bit leggy. I think in Celtic's case, again, it's another new starting 11 that hadn't been playing together before. Some players that hadn't played, the Japanese lads that hadn't played since probably early December. It was their first game. A few players just out of touch. Whose rhythm just wasn't there. I'm going to pick on Callum McGregor and Tom Rogic, whose rhythm and just the timing just wasn't there. The timing of passes, the timing of decisions was just a little bit wonky. Not bad games, just a little bit rusty almost. And add that into the mix with new players who put in an awful amount of effort obviously initially in that first 45 minutes, and then it kind of gradually tailed off. I think it just a bit of a combination of that, and then you add into the mix playing a team who themselves are going through an absolute transformation in the way that they're playing in Hibs. And you've got to add that into the mix. And I think that had a big impact on the game. I mean, Hibs were clearly hell-bent on keeping possession for as long as they possibly could. And as I said on Twitter, no team since Hearts in 2016, so, you know, 5 years ago, nearly 6 years ago, have actually out-possessioned Celtic in a domestic game of any sort at Celtic Park. So that was quite a noteworthy kind of event in itself. And you can see that the Hibs players are learning Maloney ball, if we can call it that. They coughed up a goal after 3.5 minutes trying to play the ball out from the back. So, you know, they've got a lot to learn as well, and they haven't necessarily got the players for it. I mean, the guy Boucheri looks a big, solid kind of defender, but is he going to be spraying the ball 30 yards up the pitch? Hanlon's one that likes to get it and ping it into channels, as opposed to a more nuanced sort of style. So they're learning, I think, as well. So that all added. And then the second half, we let them have the ball, frankly. I mean, just to give you one stat on that, which was quite interesting to me, if nobody else, was that to say that Hibs had more passes than any other team that we've played this season, bar Leverkusen, and had more possession than any other team at Parkhead since, as I say, for 6 years, they actually packed less Celtic defenders. They took less Celtic defenders out the game than virtually any other team this season. They would have been fourth worst in that. So they had a huge amount of possession, but they rarely, apart from in the first few minutes, actually got beyond Celtic's defence. So, yeah, very, yeah, very odd game, very interesting game. For me, I found it fascinating.
Yeah, there was loads going on, and the Hibs very much strike me as a team in transition. That you know, their sole purpose at the minute is to keep possession, and I eventually those progressive passes will come. I do believe, but at the minute they're like, okay, we need to pass here and pass here, and they're developing their system. But Celtic, like you said, there was a couple of sketchy moments. Not even mentioning the Nisbet chance in the first half. But in the first couple of minutes, even there was a couple of moments when, you know, Rio Hatate was bumping into Cal McGregor and he was getting in the way of Greg Taylor on the left hand side. And it was just signs that maybe they're adjusting to this new thing. But then eventually, after the goal went in, it clicked and Celtic started to control the ball and create chances and press Hibs and really stamp their authority on the game. James, your early thoughts on what Celtic tried to do in that first half, what they were trying to implement, and I guess how well they did it.
Yeah, I have largely the same impression from Alan. I think some stats I can offer to provide some context. So I think Hibs is fascinating. We were fascinating, and the interplay was very, very fascinating. So Hibs, if you look at their OBV, which is the stats bomb metric I've been talking about frequently since I got access to it a couple of months ago, is so its components are passing, defensive actions, dribbles and carries, shooting, so shot, and then goalkeeping. So, and then you add those up and it comprises the overall team OBV. So basically what it does is it tries to model and measure every single action and whether it helps your team score a goal or hurts your team's score chances of scoring goal. And then the opposite, this is where it offers a little bit better, probably, metrics for defending is, okay, you know, how do you balance out something where you make a good defensive play versus when you screw up and you actually increase the odds of the opponent scoring, right? So that's kind of the framework here. So there's been two opponents this season that have had a negative OBV against Celtic in the game. The first was St. Mirren when we beat them 6-0 and they had an early sending off, and then Hibs. And not only was Hibs OBV negative, they were negative in four of the five components. The only one that they had a marginal positive was goalkeeper. Okay. So that to me screams of a team that is doing something new and was not very good at it. Combined with, and then the reason why I say that may be a seminal part of the game is So Celtic did try to do a lot of things different, and Alan posted, and you know, Maeda was an expected revelation, shall we say, with his pressing. You know, we talked about it. We kind of all expected this. It's always fun to watch it. But as a team, Celtic had 142 pressures. Okay. For the season average, including that game, is 105. Okay. Counter pressures were about the same. So 28 versus a season average of 28.38. The issue was that regains, so how many times do the pressure actions actually result in getting the ball back? Okay. 23 regains versus an average of 21.33. So a marginal uptick, but nowhere near proportionally to the increase in actual pressures.
That's a lot of effort, isn't it, for not much gain?
Exactly. And counter pressures were actually only one versus 3.05 season-wide average. So I would say a lot of what we were trying to do, to Alan's point, you've got different cogs in the machine now. Not a lot of time to get settled. You had Forrest on the left. You know, I don't think we've ever mistaken him for a force relative to pressing. So this is what we've talked about, the Jenga analogy and the idea of the system and how the pieces fit together. And I think you had more pieces playing Ange ball, but it was very kind of lumpy, and it allowed a lot of space that a better team or a team that wasn't playing a new system poorly may have capitalized on more. You know, you had a lot of those kind of reversal balls into space where it just took out, as Alan said, their packing scores weren't great. And I think a lot of that had to do with this, just they weren't very good at it. It's not that there weren't opportunities, there wasn't space. It's just, you know, they weren't up for the challenge at this point in their migration. And maybe the, you know, maybe it's a mistake what Maloney's doing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know Hibs well enough. You know, do they have the players to be playing that type of style of play? Certainly against, you know, Celtic, you could question the sanity of that. So I think that, so when I kind of shake it all out, it's Hibs playing a new way, not doing it very well at all. And then Celtic migrating towards pure Ange ball, which is, you know, what we have talked about is more progressive initial pressing, right? That's the piece that hadn't been there. The counter pressing had actually been good and getting better. That's one area that we really started to improve, even guys like Turnbull and Rogic. So we definitely went more in that direction. It's just it didn't really work that well. Outside of the goal, yeah. I mean, the goal was more of a counter pressure, I think, that Maeda's early goal. So obviously it only takes one for a goal, but so that's kind of how I think about it and balance out the two parts of, and it was, that's why it was fascinating to see all this kind of get put into a box and shake it up and see what the hell would happen.
Yeah. And actually, sorry, just jump in. Sorry. And actually the second goal was the result of an early, very quite aggressive vertical pass from Taylor. Great pass actually from Taylor from a central position.
Was tremendous, tremendous.
Inverted into Abada, who took it really well actually, and that just caused chaos. That which is another feature that we've seen laterally in the team, that sort of more aggressive vertical forward passing. So if you're the coach and you're taking the positives, to coin the cliche, you look at both goals, you say, yep, well that's because of the way we want to set up and play. But you know, did you do it over 90 minutes? No, nothing, not even close.
Mm-hmm. Mark Duffy in the comments is actually doing my job for me. He's saying to like and subscribe. So thank you for that, Mark. But
Mark, submit your CV, Mark. We may have to replace this guy.
We've got a space on the screen. We can fit another one in. Come on, Mark.
Exactly. Do as Mark says. If you're watching on YouTube, do like the video and subscribe as well. If you're not subscribed, where you'll get the Huddle Breakdown, you'll get other videos as well. And we will have a video on the Celtic new boy who hasn't been announced yet, Matt O'Reilly, who's joining the club from MK Don. So that'll be available on the channel whenever it is eventually announced. It seems like it's going to be dragging on for about another couple of hours before they eventually put up a photo of him with a Celtic jersey. Before we get into the actual the individual performance, I just want to ask one more question on your pressing take there, James. So let's say, for example, we don't have that much success with the press, but that one example of the goal happens and that comes from the press. So a success for the press is winning the ball back, but how often does that lead to a goal, or how often does that lead to a chance is sort of the question I'm getting at. Is one goal from one press and countless other failed presses not a good success rate?
Yeah, so I honestly, off the top of my head, I don't know on a percentage basis what it would be. I do know that there's plenty of analysis that, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but, you know, if you recover the ball within 10 seconds, that goal was a perfect example, right? So you recover the ball, and then that's the point at which an opposition defense is least set up, least organized, and you get gaps and potential mistakes and, you know, that kind of frenzy. We talk about transitions a lot. Within 10 seconds, and I believe it's, I don't think that's linear, meaning that if you're able to shoot within five, it's more than just, you know, twice as good as 10. You know what I mean? Like the faster you're able to put together a counterattack or win possession in the final third via press or counter press and then shoot, particularly from central areas, then your probabilities go way up from scoring. So I don't know specifically what the calculus is off the top of my head as far as numbers. Yeah, yeah. But again, this comes back to systems, right? So ultimately, the more you're pressing, because again, if you're pressing and you're not being successful, then that creates transition vulnerabilities for yourself, right? So that's, you know, the flip side of that is that guys get out of position potentially. There's more space to capitalize on. And because you're farther forward, you know, you get more vulnerable to the opposition progressing the ball. So, as we said, Hibs were dreadful at it. And I think some of that was because of how good we were pressing as well. Meaning that, you know, it's not all about these event data. You know, there was good closing down of space. They had a real difficulty identifying passing lanes. And again, how much of that was because of lack of familiarity in the system, lack of experience playing that way, lack of skill set fitting with the players compared to what we were imposing on them. That's impossible to kind of decompose, but it's all probably part of the mix. It's just a question of what the relative weighting would be.
So I think James should accept the challenge of being set some homework to come up with a model for evaluating the benefits of what good looks like from a good pressing performance in that sense. But I think as well, Enda, there's going to be some subtle pieces around just messing up and disrupting what the other team's trying to do. So if you think about the number of times that Maeda pressured Macy and just messed up his kicks and just forced him to kick inaccurately or forced him to kick out wide as opposed to maybe he wanted to go down a channel, you've just disrupted the opposition. You might have forced a header and the ball goes out in the halfway line as opposed to them getting possession on halfway, for example. So, you know, these are little subtle things that can happen. I mean, there was one great press that Maeda did, and actually Macy pinged it perfectly out to a guy on the right wing. And this is the danger from pressing, is that if everyone follows the trigger correctly, you're actually really exposed if somehow they manage to get out of it and ping a beautiful ball 50 yards, because suddenly this guy's in space. So there can be downsides as well. Even though you've pressed effectively, you've actually got a bad outcome, and that's the risk element of it as well. So yeah, it's not an easy thing to quantify, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So let's give the people what they want, and that is some Rio Hatate content. So I mean,
I thought we were going to get sacked then.
Listen, it's been talked about as potentially one of the best debuts for Celtic in recent memory. I can't remember personally seeing a player take to the field and be so dominant and perform to the level that we've been told he really is on the first day in his job. So Alan, have you got your numbers done up on Rio Hatate from this game and the impact that he had?
So this is fascinating because, like you know, it sounds like everybody else. I was sat watching the game thinking, oh my God, we found a Paul Scholes. Like, really, this is really exciting. He just looks, he plays like Paul Scholes. How exciting is that? You know, it's like pinging long balls, trying aggressive, quick passes, you know, driving into space, his ability to find space, both with a run and a pass, and his positioning, you know, his challenges, he was in there, he was all over the place, all over the pitch. Yeah, it just looked super exciting. And then I actually looked at the numbers, you sort of thought, actually, you know, he didn't really excel on any metric. And I was really surprised people, I imagine. But before people kind of think I'm going to be contrary here and start throwing their arms up in the air, let me just, you know, reel this back a bit and give you a bit more of a nuanced answer to that. So if you look at his performance and look at across a range of performance metrics, so covering creativity, defending and attacking, right? He was ranked only, he was actually 12th on pass completions. He actually gave the ball away on 6 of his first 11 passes, which probably nobody remembers, but he gave the ball away a lot in that first sort of 20 minutes and then he settled down. But overall, he was only 78% for his passing. But then he actually provided 3 key passes, which was top in the squad. The only metric he was top in was providing 3 key passes. But his expected assists was only 4th best, which tells you that the chances he created weren't particularly good quality chances. Excuse me. Then if you look at defending, he was actually 4th overall in defensive action success, and he was 3rd in number of successful challenges, which with 7. So, you know, pretty decent. His packing score, he was only 6th in the team, which surprised me.
That does surprise me because I remember watching him and thinking he's picking out a really smart pass.
Only third.
A couple of the ones that looked like they were going to be genius got intercepted. So
yeah, they did. Some of them didn't make it. You loved the ambition, even if the outcome wasn't perfect. So he was 5th in pack passes and 6th in packing score overall. He was 4th in possessions in the box and he was 5th in expected goals and he was 3rd in overall category score. So I'll pause there because who does this remind you of? Who did I say to you a couple of weeks ago? You look across all the metrics and you see somebody who's never top of any of them, but he's always 3rd, 4th, 5th, and every single one across the pitch. And that was Ryan Christie. So if you want almost a facsimile of a Ryan Christie performance, that was it. In terms of, you know, he gave the ball away a lot. He tried things you thought, well, that wasn't really on, was it? But he contributed defensively. He contributed creatively. He contributed to goal threat. He wasn't the top at any of them. But across the board, if you want to look at an all-rounder, that's exactly what he gave. So I think that made me very happy, and I think, as I say, my conclusion about Hatate was that he played with expanded horizons. Is what I want to say. He played as if there was possibilities all the time, and I love that. He always thought there was a great ball on. He always thought he could beat his man. He always was thinking positively, and that mindset and that attitude allied to the work rate that he put in, I think, is really encouraging.
Yeah, I dare say he would prefer your analogy to Paul Scholes than to Ryan Christie, but I see what you're doing with it as well, and I definitely see the comparison to both of them in the style of play. And to be fair, it's much more accurate than the BBC's description of Nakamura, which it was just, the lowest common denominator between them. And,
dogs, duh.
Yeah, you know what? I that was ridiculous, but I always, you know, we all have older, how old is Chick Young now? I mean, right, he's ancient, right? Yeah. You know, I have a tough time hammering older people that are way up there.
Being stupid.
We're just being stupid, culturally stupid, right? I mean, you know, my parents are in their mid-70s and, you know, God love my mother from Clyde Bank. She says the most inappropriate stuff sometimes and it just, you're just like, Mom, come on. But, you know, it's just a different age now, shall we say.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I actually want both of your feedback, but particularly Alan's relative to kind of the breadth, because I remember one of the first pieces I actually read on your site was after I discovered it was on Encham, coming out of the 17-18 season. And that was kind of the first when I'm thinking about, okay, comps. You know, I always like to comp and benchmark when I do these kind of things. So that was when he was like fit and firing, playing in that kind of dual pivot. Because, you know, Hatate, that's the part of the Christie analog that I think Hatate has that doesn't, that Christie didn't really, was that kind of range of passing from deep.
Yeah.
So a lot of Christie's is kind of around the box, and he has, you know, he's had incredible touch and vision and creativity in that regard. But he's not one from, you know, 50 yards out to be going diagonal. So when Ncham was at his absolute best playing in that, which he was not that long, and he did not play in that role very frequently other than that season, that was kind of the analog that I was thinking of. Because he kind of the same way, he wasn't, you know, he was more of a spatial defender. He wasn't dominant in duels, but athletic and mobile.
So yeah, sorry, James. I think on that point about range of passing, I would say yes. But the thing with Ncham was excellent at that. It's a great skill. He broke lines. His range of passing was good. He didn't do a lot defensively. He didn't threaten the goal very much. Hatate was way more rounded in that Christie way of his. But I think the seven duels won and the two lost was the standout stat for me of his. But as I say, none of his stats were stood out really. It's when you looked across the range and you looked at the narrative of this guy has just contributed to all the boxes. He's going to fill my spreadsheet all the way across, which I love. that's really where the value was.
Yeah,
the attitude he brought to the game was just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. My post-match analysis, I know FODMAP data isn't exactly the most scientific, but I was quite surprised to see he had only 29 completed passes by the end of the show, by the end of the game. But I guess a better way of looking at it as well is when you look at the heat map that's been published in the meantime, where he literally was everywhere on the pitch at some point in the game. He was an all action midfielder throughout the game. My memory is still a little bit hazy of this because I was quite young at the time, but I would have put him more as a Stan Petrov style midfielder, where he was capable of doing the deep and dirty stuff as well as being really creative. So that's the sort of slot that I have him in so far from on first look. And another player who got his debut for Celtic was Daizan Mieda, who started up front, got his first goal as well after 3.5 minutes. James, I know you've been looking at some new pressing data for Mieda and things of that ilk. I guess that's what we're looking at with Mieda, potentially as the speedster up front who's going to press the hell out of the opposition.
Yeah, just relentless. Speed and motor, when you combine those two, and that intensity and that desire to just keep doing it. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't, you know, basically just have access to SPFL and then Europa League and then early Champions League metrics for this season with StatsBomb. So I haven't done a full study as far as, you know, 40 combined pressures and counter pressures. Intuitively, that just sounds like an insane number based off of the other numbers that I've seen, particularly in a team that's, you know, not with 30% possession. You know what I mean? It's not like we were completely dominated from a possession perspective where we would spend most of the game defending and trying to put pressure on. So yeah, it's a different animal, even more so than Kyogo. And I think Alan posted on.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That in his post today, to put that into perspective. So, yeah, I mean, it's exciting to think about when and if they're able to play together, what that might look like. As far as, you know, defending from the front, as we've talked about before.
Alan, is there anything that you've seen from doing your own stats on Mayday that stands out?
I mean, it is that, but it's really fascinating watching a player like him, because I'm completely reevaluating in my own head what I think a striker is and what a striker does. Because if I tell you that he actually was only in possession 13 times, and yet he had 33 pressures, which means he was closing down sprints. So 33 times he's sprinting to close people down. He only got the ball 13 times. So, you know, he's spending, you know, nearly three times the amount of in the game, not even making diagonal runs, you know, the classic striker off the ball movement. His movements and his sprints and his effort is virtually all defensive. That's just quite incredible. And I'm still kind of trying to process that, really, as to what that means. And you know, it's going to be one to ponder. And there might be an element, a little bit of, you know, debut and trying to impress. I mean, Kyogo averages just about 15 pressures a game. So 33. Okay. And he only played 74 minutes, right? He can't keep that up. I mean, it's just going to be exhausted. You know, he completed 9 out of 10 passes. That's quite good, but he only touched the ball twice in the box, and, you know, one pack pass. I mean, this is like economy, on speed. This, really, in terms of the amount of what he's contributing on the ball to the team, is the absolute minimum, and yet, you know, he's adding value in other ways. So, you know, if you spoke to like a Gary Lineker or an Ian Rush, if I'm clicking, these players you probably don't even remember, older people will know, sort of great strikers from the sort of British game from years gone by. Ian Rush actually was very good at pressing before it was called pressing. But, you know, or even like Scotland fans will remember, you know, Joe Jordan, or even players like Steve Archibald and people like that. It's just a different way of playing the game. So it's fascinating, but I'm just keen to see how it develops, really. Could you actually have him and Kyogo in the same team? I mean, someone's got to kick the ball.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it develops. I actually do not remember Gary Lineker or Ian Rush as the players. I wasn't born when Gary Lineker shat himself at Italian 90, so that'll tell you how much I remember of Gary Lineker. Before we move on to the second half performance, which I think is actually quite interesting, and there's a couple of different theories that you could draw from that second half performance, I want to mention Carl Starfelt, who has come under quite a bit of criticism over the last couple of weeks. Alan Stubbs, quite critical of him in an article as well. And I mean, we did a piece last week on the defenders, and he was one of the weakest in the team. So I've seen a lot of reaction to this game in terms of the Starfelt performance and how amazing it was. Now, for me, I'm not being facetious for the sake of being facetious here, but I thought he was grand. I thought he was fine. It was a good performance. He was confident at times. He got himself involved in quite a number of duels, and I think he won pretty much all of his duels. I could be wrong on that. But, I mean, I didn't think he was an absolute, you know, Rolls Royce of performance from Starfelt. So how did he come up in the numbers? Like, what was his performance like?
So I'll be the hitman, Alan. Since you share the name with Stubbs, I'll go first. So I have a piece that's going to come out. I don't know if it's tomorrow or early next week, but I've already done the work and written it and submitted it. But basically looking at the defensive line, so kind of the average defensive action distance from goal. There's a metric in StatBomb. And then also the average distance that passes are made. So you can think of that as, you know, how far away from goal are each player when they do certain things on average. Averages are not perfect. There's distributions, blah, 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 you know, all the usual caveats. And what's interesting is Starfelt's level of defending OBV. It's, again, this metric that measures the value of each defensive action and then rolls it up into one number for the whole game, including times that he screws up or, you know, so good things, bad things, weight it all up and then go back. So if you look at his performances above the average for the season, so when he's been higher up the pitch on average, i.e. playing a high line, his OBV has been negative 6 out of 7 games. And it was negative marginally. It was barely negative. It was negative against Hibs. And I believe that was outside of a game like, you know, St. Mirren, when we were just onslaughting a team that was packed in with a man down. I believe it was the highest line that we've played, a kind of average distance for both center backs. Or if not, it was towards the very high end. So as has been kind of typical with him, I think he does a lot of things well, a lot of things in volume well, meaning that his duel rate was actually good. He won 15 of 21 duels overall. He had 5 interceptions. Again, we've talked about this in the past as it pertained to Brown, right? Those interceptions always kind of stick in our minds for confirmation bias because they stick out so much, right? We remember those. But it's the other ones that we oftentimes don't remember. And that's where something like this OBV, I think, can really be helpful in measurement. So when you kind of weighed it all out, his defending performance was not great. It wasn't horrific. I mean, he's had much worse. Let's put it that way. He's had more glaring mistakes, like in the first Hearts game, you know, which was probably his worst of the season. Understandable, again, empathy on that because he was just kind of thrown in. But the other part is that his passing consistently does not do that much. And that was, again, his amount of OBV and passing was, you know, not it was actually below his season average, which, again, because he was playing a higher line closer to goal, you know, if you map these things, it makes common sense that your passes closer to the opponent's goal is going to have is going to have more of an impact relative to scoring chances of scoring because of distance, really. And even that for him doesn't really hold up that relationships that you would expect. That's partly what I wrote in this article. So it wasn't a bad performance, wasn't a terrible performance. It was kind of a performance relative, statistically speaking. And he didn't have any major errors that led to anything significant, which, you know, is probably, I would say, from an impression perspective, the people that want to root for him and that want the narrative that he's going to be good and fine, there was ample evidence to confirm that bias. And, you know, for people that want to be negative on him, you know, he gave the ball away once kind of ridiculously in the attacking half. And, you know, maybe he didn't cover a runner as well as he could in one case. You know what I mean? There's always these things that you can pick out. It would not be one that I would profile and say, this is, you know, Starfelt being bad. And it also wouldn't be one where I'd say, like, this is the epitome of what Starfelt can be playing a high line as a center back.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that people are actually enthusiastic about what he's doing and actually getting behind him, because who knows, the confidence that he knows that he's being backed by the Celtic fans could actually play into him having better performances on the
pitch.
Let's
hope so. Yeah,
exactly. Everyone wants him to play well, so hopefully he can actually up his performances. I will also say, in his defense, a couple of times, and I don't want to hammer Greg Taylor because I feel bad about ever hammering Greg Taylor, but
this is your secret Liam Scales agenda manifesting.
Yeah, it is. It is absolutely. I'm fighting Liam Scales' corner. No, I really do think that Greg Taylor leaves him high and dry at times with his positioning, because I mean, the Nisbet goal is the prime example of that, where Greg Taylor's just miles up the pitch, nowhere to be seen, and there's this massive hole at left back where they were able to exploit. And I just don't think that doesn't do Starfelt any favors, who's going to have to go and cover that hole.
I think Boys Analytics actually, Ross from Boys Analytics actually chronicled some of that with the thread, where some of this has to do, I think, with just Taylor not being that fast. So his recovery speed was, as Ross documented there, I think it was McGregor smoked him and got back, and Hitate as well. So, you know, we've talked about this. I mean, Taylor just doesn't have some of those raw athletic characteristics that, you know, at his age, he's probably not going to get sprint faster. You know, he's probably about as fast as he's ever going to be at the age he's at. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not the person to talk about the positioning issue. Allen's going to be much better at that. I mean, there's, you know, we've talked about the inverted aspect of the fullback play at times, where they're going to get the being exposed on the flanks. And again, this comes back to suitability of your center backs, because Starfelt's not pacey either. So, you know, playing the system this way, and this has been my concern, is as we adopt more of this style of play, there's going to be more transitions. And oh, by the way, as bad as Hibs were, they still had, I think, 0.79 XG, which again is not a huge problem, but that is a good bit higher than what we've been allowing, conceding. A good chunk of that was from open play, obviously, with that Nisbet attempt that he, you know, normally would expect somebody to score that. We're probably going to see more of this. That's my concern, given the pieces that we have to play in the puzzle.
Yeah. Sean F is saying that Hatate could be an option at fullback, but wouldn't like to move him out of midfield. Judging on the piece that he wrote himself, actually, about moving across the water, I don't think he wants to move back to fullback, but the sounds of it, he big time sees himself as a midfielder and an attacking midfielder at that, and would recommend going and reading that piece if you want to get a feel for what kind of person and what kind of player he sees himself as. The second half, Alan, it's an interesting one, because I think it's something that Celtic haven't done against any opposition, really, be that in the Europa League or in the SPFL this year, and that's just surrendering possession. They just didn't press. They didn't really care all that much about holding on to the ball. They were very much happy with Hibs passing the ball around. Now, my theory on that is that they weren't really afraid of what Hibs were doing. Hibs weren't creating much chances. They weren't playing progressive passes. They were playing back and forth football for large parts of it. So why bother waste your energy when you're 2-0 up and you can contain them this way without holding on to the ball? So I don't know if you buy into that theory.
Well, they're human beings, and human beings will generally take the path of least resistance. So if you can get a good result by putting in minimal effort, then guess what? That's what you're going to do. Certainly what I'd do. So, yeah, I think there's a bit of that. It's just normal. Like you say, I think you make a very good point, and you articulated it very well, which is that Celtic didn't feel that by letting Hibs have the ball, they didn't feel like there was a great deal of jeopardy in the game. And therefore, they were quite comfortable to just keep a shape and keep a discipline, and then see what happened on any transitions that did come along. So, and fair enough, you know, 2-0 is fine. I think there's probably helped by the fact that, as I say, there was definitely an element of legginess. The one thing I will say that kind of disappointed me a little bit was that, having, you know, got the rule changed to 5 substitutions, why are we waiting to the 75 minutes to make changes. I mean, that's just ludicrous. I mean, Maeda made, you know, one pass in the second half. I mean, really, he could have
that's my COVID-ridden wife. Say hello to the world. I told you we were filming.
No, come and join us. I want to hear what you're going to say about counter-pressing stats. Maeda could really have come off after 60 minutes, probably. Hitati had faded quite badly, and he completed 14 passes in the second half, but, you know, his fizz had kind of fizzled out a little bit by that stage. You know, Rogic was having a bad day. And Forrest, how long did you really want to keep James Forrest on, given how long he's been out? Taylor had a decent game by his numbers, even though it didn't seem like it at the time. Any number of players you could have taken off and given at least half an hour, if you know, to others. So that aspect of it really surprised me. It seemed like really poor game management in that respect. And I don't understand. I can't give you an answer for why, what the thinking was for keeping the substitutions back so long. That was the only disappointment for me, really.
Mm. James, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, some of them you can understand just because of coming back. I mean, you know, for Jota, he may have been on a somewhat of a minutes limit. You know what I mean? He wasn't going to maybe come on for a half hour. Who knows, with Giakoumakis. Again, I'm trying to play devil's advocate and be charitable. So maybe Giakoumakis' timeline of recovery, given how long he was out, limiting those minutes. I don't know. I mean, that those would be the most reasonable, plausible things I can come up with.
We didn't even use the five subs.
Strong bench. Right. That's what I said. I mean, I'm trying to be charitable. I don't know. That continues to be my, you know, the nexus of Ange's mentality towards fitness, injuries, and player utilization remains my biggest concern for the second half, meaning that I think we now get a sense of what Maeda is going to do. The idea that he's going to do that twice a week, even for 65 minutes a game, and not have potential issues, either in decline in performance level potentially, or injury risk, that kind of thing. I mean, I cannot imagine a guy like that does not have higher hamstring injury risk with the amount of, something I cannot relate to, which is fast twitch muscles in that regard. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's a blind spot, if what it might be, because to your point, Alan, I mean, we finally had the bench to do it. Maybe he saw what was going on with the fact that we were maybe not as comfortable, meaning that we were kind of comfortable, but we weren't, you know what I mean? Like it was sort of on a knife's edge in some regard. I mean, I could see that logic anyway, because of how much mm-hmm. ball, you know, of the ball that Hibbs was having. So again, I'm trying to come up with theories, even though it's an area that I continue to be concerned about.
Yeah. It could just be the rhythm of the game as well. I mean, too many subs at one time can often upset the play and the sort of focus of certain players in the game. Just
I mention something again? Because of my COVID brain fog mind, it just sprung in, and I want to say it before I forget. Was there any word on Biton's availability? Because that was probably the most surprising. I hadn't heard anything or read anything about him with an injury or picked up a knock or anything. And I think the fact that he was not selected for the bench, I thought was pretty interesting relative to McCarthy, given who had played the bulk of the minutes up until this week. So again, I didn't know if anyone had heard anything, including commenters, anyone watching, throw it in the comments. He's back in training today. There you go. Thank you, Sean F.
There we go. Sean F. with the answers. First, we have Mark Duffy doing my job. Now we've got Sean F. also doing my job, because I probably should have known that coming into this podcast. But before we finish up, we'll get to some of these comments. Stephen is saying in the markets, we shop for defenders. You're bound to end up with players who are prone to error. The fact that CCV isn't and has made such an impact is a reason to sign him more so than Jota. Well, it actually seems like the Jota deal might take a little bit longer than expected. Benfica apparently want to keep him now, but the sounds of it, and the CCV for me is the guy as well that you're going to want to get nailed down to a contract before we get Jota over the line. Sean F, who is commenting away, says that Greg Taylor deserves more discussion than Starfelt. I think we will do a left back show at some point, but I mean, I've spoken about Liam Scales enough for most people on this podcast so far, so I'm not sure. We might wait until further down the line before we get to that. If you're watching on YouTube, do drop a comment before we finish up. We'll try to get to some more. A couple of games coming up now, very important games after the Rangers draw against Aberdeen, thanks to Scott Brown in some way, shape or form.
Terrific refereeing performance from Brown, I thought.
Excellent. We are a show that have never been critical of referees and never will be after that performance.
Alan, I am dying with anticipation for the Yorkshire Whistles decomposition of that match, because I want to see how it all balances out, because it was a train wreck. It was a vintage Clancy train wreck.
Yeah, but the whining is so out of kilter.
Oh, I know.
Reality of what actually happened.
Right.
That's the
but
thing.
I did not see the beginning of the game. I dropped in a little bit late, and so I missed apparently there was a penalty potential incident in the first half that he didn't award, which would have, and then I did see most of the rest of the disaster. So that's why I'm curious to see how it all shakes out.
I'm ruining Ender's kind of running time here, but just to say, I mean, that's obviously taken all of the airtime, but actually what was the most important thing for me was that was a really bad performance. They looked really poor. They looked desperate.
Yeah, Aberdeen
poor.
Battered them in the last couple of minutes.
Aberdeen are horrible, by the way.
They should have scored.
Yeah, but they still should have won, easily.
Yeah. I mean, this is such a transit sort of a weird angle that we're going for here, transition into Aberdeen talk. But the Aberdeen manager was having a go at Jamie McGrath, the St. Mirren player, for not signing for him. I'm not sure if you've seen this. Essentially questioning, saying that, Aberdeen's not for everybody. They can't take if they can't take the pressure. I was like, Aberdeen are what, mid-table in the SPFL right now? And watching them, they don't seem to be a team that there's much pressure for playing for at the minute.
What's McGrath's nationality?
Irish.
The homerism again. I knew that answer. I asked it to set you up to just show that you're a total homer. Every guy that's Irish. Here we go again. Give me a break.
he's the guy that's behind all these signings that Celtic are making. These kids from the Irish League.
Yeah. I'm making things happen. That's what's going on.
There you go.
Anyway, that was
Desmond's guy in Ireland.
Yeah.
Can I respond to Sean real quick, just because he answered my question about Bitten. Taylor's defensive action OBV was zero, okay, which is not good for a defender, right? So that part of his performance was not great. But to Alan's point, his passing was top notch. I mean, the amount of value that he brought with his passing, including that we resulted in the penalty, but it wasn't just that. I mean, it was a lot of the game was put his overall performance number very, very high as a result. So again, you get lumpy type of performances, So again, if you're a pro Taylor guy, you're going to point to the passing. If you're an anti Taylor guy, you're going to say, well, he didn't do that well defensively. Ultimately, probably both right. It's a question of how it all kind of shakes out. So I'm sorry, Alan. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it was just the weirdest game, right? Taylor, I thought, I noticed when I was watching the game live, I noticed the sort of a couple of times he was out of position, and then when he dived in and created that dangerous moment in the second half and then missed Cadden, he actually by miles had the highest packing score of any player. Yeah. He was the only one over 100, 124. Right, Rogic, who I thought had an awful game and just screwed up over and over and over again, had the highest expected scoring contribution of any player. It was just a weird game. It really was weird.
Yep.
Yeah.
Come on, we'll move on. Sorry.
I actually do have training of my own at 7 o'clock, so we'll rally through this last bit. Cup game this weekend against the lower level opposition. What are you doing if you're Ange Postecoglou? Are you making wholesale changes in this game, getting Julian some game time potentially, Giakoumakis, maybe giving him a start, seeing what's happening? Or are you a manager that's going for momentum?
I think you rotate responsibly. So maybe if he's up to it again. So this goes back on what I just said a short while ago. I mean, it depends on fitness levels. That to me is the utmost importance. So if guys aren't ready to put in, at least 45 minutes to get them to halftime, you wouldn't start them. So depending on whether Julian's up for that, I mean, you would think, given the situation, I mean, I don't know. This is an away game, right? I mean, I have no idea what their pitch is or if it's small or, what the dimensions are, that kind of thing. But you would think for a center back, it's not going to be that taxing of a game. So maybe that comes into it. But, I think reasonably rotate, maybe get Iguchi in for a start, that kind of thing over maybe, first cup game. Scottish Cup game, so maybe they don't want to bench the captain, but that kind of thing where you give guys a break, because we need to rotate. We're gonna have to rotate. So what better time than the present to start that habit, and doing it in a smart way to get guys rest.
Yeah. So the Indo Drill Stadium, it's actually a pretty short pitch, but it's pretty wide. It's not 75 yards, is same as Celtic Park. It's an artificial pitch, right?
So okay. I
don't think we'll be risking people who potentially, like Julian. I just don't see that he'll be playing in that game.
That makes sense then. Yeah.
I think to me it's not an overall, I think it's looking across the squad and saying who needs minutes, and this is a suitable game for them to get minutes, versus who needs a bit of momentum. So, for example, Taylor and Forrest might be good candidates to start again. Hatate and Maeda might be good candidates to start again, but only give them 60 minutes type of thing. Whereas, some players who need game time, so why would you play McGregor over Iguchi, right? That to me wouldn't make any sense, right? That'd be an obvious change to make. You'd be careful with Jota again because of artificial pitch. So I think you need to look through the squad and make a bit of an individual decision based on what's the state of the pitch, who needs minutes, who can we start and then take off, etc. It's going to be a bit of a horses for courses, isn't that? I would imagine.
I'd like to see Mikey Johnston, just because he looks like a guy, again, Mr. Analytics here. He looks like a guy who could use some confidence. Maybe give him a game against a lower league team and hope that he has a good game and maybe scores a goal would be nice, and kind of boost that confidence, because he should be, miles above the opposition as far as level. So I'd like to see him get at least meaningful time if he doesn't start.
Yeah, I mean, they're eighth out of 10 in League One, right? So my hometown team, Falkirk, who are horrible this season, are even above them. So they're not going to be a great side.
No. So hopefully we will see some minutes for players who haven't got minutes, and hopefully they'll be coming out of this game in time for Tynecastle fit and ready for what is an absolutely crucial game for Celtic, because that gap is narrowing. James Allen, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. My thanks to the people who are commenting on the YouTube channel. If you want to get us on podcasts, it's on Spotify and iTunes. And if you want to follow us on YouTube, it's Breakdown Inc. Subscribe to the channel below and like the video so more people can see them. We will have a Matt O'Reilly video on the channel as well tomorrow when signing is announced. So keep an eye out for that, and hopefully we will see a Celtic win this weekend as well. Thanks for watching, folks. We'll chat to you later. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.